Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Call it a little bit of constitutionally mandated political theater. The State of the Union address is a response to the Constitution's request that presidents from time to time deliver a message on the State of the Union. Well, that's evolved into a whole enormous sort of speech plus pointing to the gallery and teleprompter cues and that sort of thing. State of the Union addresses, while important and while constitutionally mandated, are hardly the most important speeches that presidents give during their terms of office. And there are many varieties of speeches that we want to focus on in the next segment here. Here's the President Roosevelt, FDR, famously reassuring Americans at a very, very difficult time in 1933.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Man, still rings true. Here's a president informing Dwight David Eisenhower.
I feel impelled to speak today in a language that, in a sense, is new. One which I, who have spent so much of my life in the military profession, would have preferred never to use. That new language is the language of atomic warfare.
President Eisenhower's Atoms for Peace speech in December of 1953. And then, of course, presidents like to, for purposes of distraction, or call it what you will, use some rhetorical dazzle. Here's Richard Nixon.
The defense of freedom is everybody's business, not just America's business. And it is particularly the responsibility of the people whose freedom is threatened. In the previous administration, we Americanized the war in Vietnam. In this administration, we are Vietnamizing the search for peace.
Americanizing, Vietnamizing, whatever it is, sometimes presidents do best when they simply state the obvious.
My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over.
Ford, Nixon, Eisenhower, FDR. Joining us now is Michael Waldman, former Clinton chief speechwriter and author of My Fellow Americans, The Most Important Speeches of America's Presidents from George Washington to Barack Obama. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So we have the benefit of living in the broadcast era where we can actually hear so many recorded speeches. But I'm wondering if you could take us back before sort of recording history and tell us of some speeches that were probably even more important than some of these.
Well, you're right, for starters, that the State of the Union is in the Constitution, but after President Washington and President Adams went up to Congress and delivered it just the same way as today, maybe without the heroes sitting next to the First Lady in the gallery, for a century, starting with Thomas Jefferson, presidents just sent it in by writing. They thought it was kingly. They thought it was giving too much power to the president to have him give a big speech in public. Yet you still had, on rare occasions, some presidential speeches that really changed how the country thought about itself. Of course, Lincoln's speeches, his second inaugural, the Gettysburg Address, we still read those. We imagine how he sounded when he said them, but the words make us think as much as they make us cheer.
And they grab us and move us to a different place. In the first inaugural, the mystic chords of memory. The second inaugural, the with malice toward none and charity toward all. They grab us and take us to a different place as opposed to sort of preaching to the converted. What makes that kind of a moment happen?
Well, you're right that it is the moment as well as the person and the words. Those very same speeches, if they'd been delivered at a Rotary Club, would have sounded very trite. But Lincoln spoke in his first inaugural at a time when the Union was falling apart. And he was basically urging the South not to leave the Union and remember what we share together, remember those mystic chords of memory that we have. In his second inaugural, it was after the Civil War, and after he'd freed the slaves, the war was drawing to a close, and people were wondering, you know, would there be a policy of punishment of the South? and he instead called for national unity and reconciliation. They weren't just words, it was policy. And we hear that in speeches, great speeches from Roosevelt to Reagan and you know, sometimes from Obama.
In terms of striking a chord, you know, Gerald Ford really struck a chord when he said, "My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over." He was right about us. Of course, the national nightmare for Gerald Ford was just beginning. In some sense, the rhetoric of those important moments belongs to America, not necessarily to the presidents who deliver the speeches, right?
That's right. We you know, as a country, we don't have necessarily, you know, we don't have a king. We don't have thousands of years of us, everybody living in the same language on the same territory. What we have are things like the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, our civic religion, as they call it, and very often the kind of narration of the country that the presidents themselves provide. So when FDR in his speeches talks about action now, and he's really describing the rise of a strong central government. And when Reagan and others talk about the country's aspirations, again, they're not talking about this piece of policy or that bill, but very often speaking to kind of a deeper set of values that we all hold.
And some of my favorite speeches come from sort of farewell warnings from presidents. George Washington's Avoid Foreign Entanglements and Eisenhower's Military-Industrial Complex speech.
Yes, it's a kind of a habit, a tradition that in the last days of a president, they give a warning from their position of wisdom. And in Eisenhower's case, of course, not only was it so striking because he was the great general who led America's armies in Europe in World War II, but he was the oldest president at the time. He was leaving office warning about the military-industrial complex. And just 3 days later, the youngest president in a long time came in, John Kennedy, and talked about bearing any burden.
And Ike turned out to be right. Michael Waldman, stay with us. He's a former Clinton chief speechwriter and author of My Fellow Americans, The Most Important Speeches of America's Presidents. We're going to talk about the State of the Union. Stay with us.